Welcome to the Phoenix Cast, a podcast about cybersecurity, technology, and innovation issues in the military. We are your hosts, John.
And Kyle.
I'm a U.S. Marine, and the opinions expressed on the cast are my own, not official military policy.
And the opinions expressed by me are my own, not those of my employer or any other businesses I happen to be associated with.
For today's episode, no guest, just the love between the hosts.
And we've got some super cool content today.
Yeah, before we get into it, we get to start with a little words have meaning portion so that we can tee up and get ready for a quite interesting article that we stumbled across. So Kyle, in the vein of words have meaning.
you're giving me nasty flashbacks to officer school right now.
Yep, yeah. This is an officer thing, but you know what? It's an IT thing too.
It is. So before we get into an article that we're going to talk about today about a new vulnerability, because shocker, there's a new one every 5 minutes. I want to talk a little bit about a word called snark, and it's very important for communication on the internet or detecting some version of tomfoolery, if you will. But we're going to start with a couple details here. So snark, which is basically a combination of snide and remark in its wordology, is an attitude or expression of mocking irreverence and sarcasm. Basically, it's a sarcastic jab, if you will, based on somebody posting anything, really. And generally, it's unwarranted, meaning like it's not like the person was trying to attack in their interest. It's, you know, Microsoft coming out with a security vulnerability patch and someone be like, well, it's about time they patched this terrible bug. That's a version of snark.
Yes, and snark featured on the internet.
Yeah, exactly. Snark is basically a unique thing where you can have it in real life, you know, you can have it in the media and things like that, but it's really a, at least in my experience, it is a thing that exists primarily online where, you know, you can have a lot of snark behind the keys of your keyboard, you know, on your Facebook message board and all the rest of these things that kind of go into it. Also, quick shout out, Urban Dictionary is one of the most amazing and terrible websites on the internet. And I highly recommend everyone go read the definitions of snark that are on Urban Dictionary, because some of them are just downright hilarious. It's good exploration fun when you're at a computer next time. Do not do this from your official military computer. I cannot protect you from UrbanDictionary.com, anything on it, on your government laptop. I also read a ton, and Ryan Holiday has a book called Trust Me, I'm Lying, which is fabulous. And he talks about snark in this book as well. And he says that snark is not the response really of the masses to the inane doublespeak of politicians. It's a defense mechanism for writers who, having nothing to say, are absolutely terrified of being criticized or derided. And so snarky writers reflect a primal fear, a fear of being laughed at. And they don't want to be mocked, so they strike first by mocking everyone that they possibly can. So he takes a very pessimistic view on this. But I also think that that has a little bit of meaning to what we're going to talk about later today. And then, you know, assuming that everyone is comfortable now with what snark is, I also want to take a quick pivot where security is hard. We've talked about this probably 1,000 times on this podcast at this point, but I just want to keep coming back to this core before we get into this article, that it's really difficult to convince large numbers of professionals and experts that something is a good idea, even in the world of cybersecurity, where it feels to me like a lot of things are black and white about whether they are a good idea or a bad idea. But the difference is that everyone's version of what that black and white or where that gray line is can be very different.
The version of hard, like what is hard for right. Kyle may not be hard for John and vice versa. Or I use the phrase a lot of times at work, from your fighting hole. So right. this problem might be hard from your fighting hole, but from mine, maybe not a thing. Or you may solve a hard problem, be it security or otherwise, one way from one fighting hole and a completely another way from another fighting hole. And depending on kind of like which way you're pointed, might be different.
That's right. If you are running a piece of open source software that you built by yourself in your spare time versus, you know, defending the nation's infrastructure, these are very distant ends of a spectrum. And what is hard for each one of those may be extremely different. And this is why, like, there's just so many ways you can apply security to information technology. An example that I often use too is, in my day job, I work in professional services, and the customers that I deal with are extremely demanding. And I don't mean that in a negative sense. They are demanding professional services, right? They're not hiring amateur services. And they want, usually when it comes to security, only the best of the best, the tippy of the top, if you will. And I used to run an IT consulting company for many years and have done primarily focused around security in the cloud. And I've done a ton of penetration tests for customers and companies. And I'll give you an example of this. If my penetration testing team found a vulnerability with a customer and I called them at 11 o'clock at night, because we often do testing, you know, after hours, I actually had no idea that if I called them and said, I have found a zero-day bug in your system that exists right now that allows me to own everything and delete all your data. I had no idea if their response would be, cool, let me wake up my entire team. We'll jump into a war room. Are you and your team available now? Or, that's awesome. Can we talk about this in 2 weeks when we do the pen test debrief? It's just, you never knew. Because
or can
just
we announce this next fiscal year after the earnings come?
Right. Our earnings calls in a few weeks. We're just going to wait a little bit longer. Because it just depended, right? And our team always errs on the side of like, before we pick up that phone and call that customer, we've got all of our stuff in order, right? We know what's going on and we are all prepared to caffeinate to get through the night to make sure that we're helping them. That's literally what they pay us to do, you know? Yeah. And it's just difficult. So before we get into this, because John and I are going to give a lot of opinions, I'm going to give some strongly held ones. And we're going to look at this article from two sides, two very different ends of the spectrum. We're going to take the sort of author's approach and we're going to take some of the people that they are referencing in the article's approach as well. But hopefully this has been enough of a preamble. John, anything else we need to cover? Do you want to kick us into this?
No, I think you have sufficiently piqued my interest and I know what we're going to be talking about. So,
right.
I'll just kick right into it. So we selected this week a Bleeping Computer article about PyPI. Now, PyPI, the Python Package Index, is the official repo for third-party open source Python projects. So think you're running Python and you want to bring in a project that does X, Y, or Z because that thing simplifies your work in some other Python thing you're doing. So rather than reinvent the wheel, somebody else already did that. And so like if you're doing something for gaming or something for watering your grass,
zipping
a project, whatever it is, you're probably going to check PyPI first to see if someone else already did this or did a prerequisite to what you're about to do. So in that vein, fairly important to the developer experience is searching these repos and seeing, hey, is there stuff here? And that code is pretty important. So what the article pointed out is they're like, hey, it would be fairly easy to hack this repo and insert malicious code that could do any one of a given thing, some of which we will say what was done. So they said, we're going to implement 2FA, two-factor authentication, for critical projects within here. And you know, the Python team out there did a pretty good job of saying, hey, no cost to you because this is open source third party stuff. So they're not expecting your enterprises just to pick up the bill or trying to implement your own 2FA. They're going to send you out hardware keys and they got support teams.
Free of cost.
Yep, free of cost. They'll have support teams that will support you as you do this, but it is going to be not something that you can do optionally. You will be forced if you are deemed a critical project, you will have to do it.
And we want to be very clear about this. They define a critical project as any of the top 1% of downloads. So any repos that are in the top 1% of downloads over the last 6 months, as well as anything that PyPI has deemed a critical dependency, things that are just like the bread and butter of PyPI's infrastructure. And they said that this is going to be required over the next few months. So they're not saying like effective immediately, you're cut off from your system. They're saying we'll work with you in the, you know, we're going to ship these free keys out to you in the whole nine yards. So they had a very strict, or not strict, that's the wrong word. They had a very specific definition of, we think these specific repos should not be unprotected, meaning should not be without two-factor authentication and free of charge. And over the next couple months, we're going to roll this out, work with you to do it.
Yep. So this was generally lauded as a good thing because security is good and a free way to make security better. Generally lauded is good. However, one of the devs was angry enough that he took and deleted his code and for one of the critical projects, deleted his code and then just republished it as if it was a new project, therefore not being popular at all because it was essentially brand new, fresh to get out of having to do this.
And this brings us to the snark aspect of why we wanted to pitch this today. So this particular user, you go read the article. I don't want to actually call this person out per se, basically said, hi, or their snarky comment back to PyPy announcing this was in quotes. They put, "Hi, we've solved supply chain security by enforcing security policies on your free labor, WTF. And then replied to their own tweet and basically said, "Nice, I just deleted my package and then uploaded a new version. So now it's no longer a critical project," i.e. cool, you have this very specific definition of who's requiring this. I'm just going to circumvent that system. So again, I would say, in my definition of what snark is, in my experience online, very snarky comment, like publicly mocking you for trying to enforce security and then publicly saying, "Here's how I did a workaround to obviously circumvent and subvert your overt attempt to enforce better security on everybody." So, haha, I'm going to continue to operate in an unsecure fashion is a weird flex, in my opinion. But
I'm ready to take that weird flex. So
go.
From their fighting hole, from the PyPy fighting hole, they're saying, hey, security is a thing. There could be compromises. Putting bad code in these repos could have serious consequences, especially for these critical projects. We are going to make security a thing. That's and as you're kind of saying it, you're letting us know a little bit kind of how you feel about it. It's like, it's weird that you're crapping on security. Now take it from the other fighting hole.
Well, hold on. John, let's keep on this side of the map for a second. Okay. I think this is really good. Before we turn that map around.
All right.
That's right.
All right.
Yeah, before we turn that map around, let's put ourselves in the shoes of PyPy for a little bit longer. So PyPy itself, right, trying to do the right thing. I think it's easy for us to put ourselves in the shoes of that. But also, we got to understand that there is a deep history of open source repos causing absolute shenanigans when it comes to security things. 2 years ago, Padleft, which is a very specific package inside of Python, was just removed. There's a whole bunch of reasons that it's not really worth getting into, but basically a very critical package that a lot of things depend on was just removed from a lot of repos with no real warning. And it caused like things to grind to a halt because nobody had copies of this anywhere. Like there were only a few mirrors and you had to update all your package repos and your library definitions to go to this new mirror. And it just was this big chaos bomb. And very recently, there have been a number of very public methods where very popular libraries in PHP, Python, Ruby, all these different things that they have compromised the open source repository by gaining access to developer credentials in some way, shape, or form, either username, password, or keys. And they've injected things that steal a lot of stuff. CTX and PHP Pass are ones that happened not too long ago where they stole thousands and thousands and thousands of AWS credentials by changing two lines inside of an open source repo to push AWS credentials that were passed through those repos to a third party. It's elegant and it's simple. And a hacker claimed responsibility for this and came out publicly and said, "I did this just to prove it could be done. I am not using those keys. I have deleted them all," which is super easy to say, impossible to verify.
Yep. Possibly telling the truth, possibly not.
Exactly, exactly. Like, oh, I'm altruistic, except I'm selling all this on dark web. But like this is happening, right? This is not theoretical. This is documented. And other companies like GitHub have done a very similar thing in the last year and a half. PyPy themselves are not like unique to this, to saying we're going to encourage you over and over and over again to not be dumb when it comes to security. And you know what? Gosh darn it. Fine. You know, you're going to act like a toddler. We're going to act like a grown up. We're going to try and enforce this in a way that we think is ethical and supportive and blah, 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 blah. So again, I don't know, John, what else? What else on this side of the map?
Makes sense. One, what you were just discussing is called the Ethical Hacking Gone Wrong article that is linked inside of the Bleeping Computer article. I have both of those in the show notes, so you can have a read on your own time. Both, I would say, highly entertaining and both quite interesting. But I think this illustrates the point of this is why we are doing this. Or the last two supply chain attacks that we talked about on this podcast were both because repos were compromised in one way, shape, or another. So hashtag totally a thing.
Totally a thing.
Yes. So I'm with you. Makes sense. I have no arguments with you thus far, although I'm waiting for some.
Oh, okay. Well, then what do you think? Any other perspectives you want to give on behalf of PyPy? On behalf of the brave souls who have to try and police such chaos all day?
No, I mean, I think it's great that they're doing this. one would even argue, like, why stop at the top 1%, right? Or why stop at critical repos? But I guess you possibly have to draw the line somewhere. But this kind of gets back to what I mentioned in the last podcast is, I want a low barrier for entry, applicable universally way to do this, because it is this important.
Right. If I had to guess, and again, this is complete and utter conjecture, everybody, and came Kyle's assumptions, would be that they said, cool, how much budget do we have to buy free keys for people? And they said, great, what does that represent of our user base? 1%? All right, we're going to enforce the top 1%, round it down or something to that effect.
So we're going to Kyle-jecture that's how they got there. Got it.
Yeah, Kyle-jectures that they got there by saying, we have 50,000 keys and we have, quick math, right? 50 million repos. So we're going to just do the top 1%. I think that math is actually phenomenally off.
Times. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And listen, like, we're all guilty of, you know, our constraints, right? That this decision is more a statement than it is a brutal enforcement of some, you know, totalitarian security mandate, to be honest with you, right? The top 1% of our repos need to have 2FA in the next few months. We're changing our policy. In my opinion, again, we're still on PyPy's side of the map, everybody. That's not that big of a deal. It's not that disruptive. And it sets the tone for what you expect for security from popular repos.
And if you can, you know, just kind of top your head math, say that this is going to reduce 93% of the attack surface by enabling 1%, one would make the argument, like, probably numerically worth it and a pretty good ROI on what you're ending up doing here.
Yeah. And we are, again, assuming a great deal, but I have to imagine that the top 1% most popular repos on their website see a disproportionately large amount of the attack traffic that they detect. And John, especially to your point, right? If they can, I mentioned the Pareto principle, you know, get 80% of the problems gone with 20% of their effort, that feels like a really darn good trade-off to me. Like, I would be on that voting party 100% of the time.
Yep. Yeah. I think these things make sense.
Okay. So if you are a developer, for example, and you've been listening to this and being like, these guys just don't get it, just wait, we're going to do it now. So, all right, everybody get ready. We're turning the map around. That's the sound of my map being turned around on the sand table or whatever, right? We're all walking to the other side of it now. So now we're no longer on the side of PyPy, right? We are on the opposite end of the battlefield. And now we are a developer who has built something that is open source, and it is in the top 1% of PyPy's measure, however they chose to measure that, right? John, I want to start off by saying that just an immense thank you to anybody listening to this, to anybody that is a part of the open source community. You are all amazing humans, because the average person in the world, even the average person in cybersecurity, cannot fathom the number of volunteer hours and completely unsung efforts that have gone into the things that you take for granted the most when you deploy a VM or you patch a system. There is just layer after layer after layer of benevolent nerdery that has gone into what we know as Linux, what we know as open source software, what we know as Python, Golang, Ruby, JavaScript, like all these languages that are out there, right? There's just so much that has gone into this, and nobody gets paid for that stuff, or at least the vast, vast majority of the open source community doesn't make a dime. They do it because they ran into a project and they said, wow, nobody has built a thing to solve my particular widget. I'm going to build a thing and I'm going to commit it to GitHub. And everyone else went, oh my gosh, so-and-so has developed this new thing that solves my problem. Star, fork, contribute, pull request. Like, it is a thing. And I just, as we get into this, I can't stress enough, this is awesome.
Case in point, I am fairly terrible at coding, and I don't think there has been a single time where I couldn't either get the exact code I needed or get code that was close enough that even someone as terrible as I am could manipulate it to get what I needed.
Absolutely. Like, if it wasn't for open source, we would have no software. There would be like three people on the planet that could do every idiosyncratic problem, and they'd all be gobbled up by Google or Microsoft or Amazon or something. I don't know. And you would just never have this incredible plethora of the ability to just like go out right now to GCP or AWS or Azure and click a button and deploy a VM and launch your WordPress blog and like add all this stuff to it and add a theme to make it look beautiful. Like that would not exist. It would just be Windows 95 or whatever, Windows 23, whatever year we're in now. That's all you would have. But the open source community gives us the spice of life when it comes to what happens in the world from every piece of software and every language that exists.
Yes, agreed.
Okay, so this particular person who commented on PyThigh with the smark, I get it, right? They're saying, are you kidding me? I'm already volunteering hundreds to thousands of hours to develop this code. Now I've got to work with you to implement two-factor authentication because you said so? Like, yep. And again, this person has a day job, right? This is something they do as a labor of love in their spare time. Like, of course, I can absolutely see it from the perspective of like, why are you forcing anything upon me? I have done all this out of the goodness of my heart, right? I have one of the top 1% packages on your website and I'm being punished for that? I totally get it.
You didn't even ask my opinion.
That's right. That's right. Right. Like this was just a decision. I didn't have a dog in the fight. I didn't have a vote, etc. There is a quoted tweet in this article too from a guy named Chris Holdgraf. I will say this because I'm going to blatantly quote him on this. And he says, hot take, the real problem is not all those PyPI maintainers not using 2FA. It's the number of critical projects with one only overly worked maintainer who is just a few months away from abandoning this project. And that, like, preamble, he said, hot take, the real problem. I am duplicating his hot take. Like, my pre-hot take is happening right now, right? You have no idea how many people are, what do we always say in the military? Like, one, getting hit by a bus away from, like, a critical part of your software development lifecycle falling to pieces.
Yeah, one bullet away.
That's it. One bullet away. Exactly. Right.
Like, and that's it. We've hit this on the podcast already. Do you remember the pseudo episode?
That's right.
Pseudo
was maintained by one guy. That's right. Yeah. There's another quote further down in the article. And again, this article was written by Ax Sharma, so I'm about to quote him too. He basically says, instead of putting the burden to the users of packages, we're now piling stuff onto the developers who already put their own labor and free time into it. You know, there is a benefit to not enforce rules on everybody, as some of those rules might make the use of those tools very burdensome for the very people who are making it very valuable, right? But putting the burden only on the packages does not really hurt that adoption so much. So there's this like really interesting dichotomy to it. And I see it through that lens too. And this is again why security is hard and the perspective matters. If I'm a developer of that open source community, I'm already doing so much, this feels like dictatorship to some extent, right? This feels like the man putting their finger, you know, on you to keep you where you are and to force you to do even more work than you're already doing. It feels not great. It is how I will sum it up, right? If you're a developer doing this feels not great. And I can completely see that.
Yeah. And you got to think since this is specific for Python, third-party open source stuff, you got to think probably not homogenous environments, right? So if we were just talking about a specific sliver of the DoD, you can think to yourself, okay, well, probably these servers or these operating systems or these things, and the environment is non-unique enough to where maybe if you said, hey, let me check, make sure it works here, good, and we're moving on, you got to think third-party open source is as far from homogenous environments as you possibly could be. And you just think about all the things you could possibly break, or in this case, since we're talking about 2FA for the people developing, do their environments even work for this? I know I did some development and I'm not going to get into the details, but I did a little bit of development at work recently and I couldn't get 2FA to work on the environments that I had to use it for. So what did I end up doing? Username and password, because that is all that I could get to work based on the different, you know, where I was able to do this and where I was able to do that. Not super helpful. That's all deprecated now and I'm not doing that anymore. And it's, you know, different stuff. So like,
you know, I love that. I'm not using username. I figured it out.
Yeah, looking back at John's stuff, like it's not going to help you. It's not going to help you. It's all been deprecated. But the fact remains, I am very security conscious. In general, I'm like responsible for looking over people who are looking over security conscious people. Right. And so I'm keeping an eye on that all the time, and I can't even get it to work.
Yeah. And you know, now let's not stay on the side of the developer. Let's not stay on the side of PyPI. Let's just basically assume that the map is now a top and we have just spun it, right? And we're just looking at this thing spinning around like the last scene of Inception. Now, this is rough, right? If you're PyPI and you're trying to force, and I mean, I'm saying that accurately, you're trying to force better security upon your people because you've watched the ecosystem around you be compromised again and again and again. Those developers or maintainers or business administrators, whatever you want to call the folks who, you know, the amazing folks who work at PyPI who help maintain this thing that we all use daily, you know, they look at their world as constantly under bombardment and people constantly trying to break this very fragile ecosystem that they help glue together in some step, right? With the help of thousands of open source developers out there, right? I'm not trying to say that they are alone in this or that they are the glue holding it all together themselves, but it's a big deal, right? But there are ripples in that pond for every decision that they make because the environment is so delicate.
Yeah, and there are non-quantifiable stigmas as well. So think like software. SolarWinds, people have told me SolarWinds is one of their favorite episodes that they've listened to on the podcast. There is, I would say, a near permanent stigma when you say SolarWinds. Yep. I don't think the first thing to your head is network monitoring. I think the first thing to your head is the hack. And then the follow-on thoughts are that. And I think the PyPI team are probably very cognizant of they don't want a negative stigma.
That's right. And it's got to hurt if you're on the PyPI team where you're getting a negative stigma because you're trying to do the right thing, right? From your perspective, from your fighting hole, this is the right decision, right? Everyone that wants to keep using username and password with a 5-character password or whatever, you know, it's like you just look at them and you're like tears in your eyes, like, please, please stop doing this. I just want you to be not dumb. Don't be dumb, right? That's all they're trying to do is help people not be dumb from their perspective. But there are reasons that people do these things. And I don't know if anyone who's listening has ever worked with software engineers. They are an opinionated bunch, right?
Wait,
and
what?
I know.
Software engineers?
Nuts. And you know, rightfully so, they're some of the smartest humans on the planet. But at the end of the day, you're never going to make everybody happy. You're just not, right? Like, it's a situation where no good deed is going to go unpunished on the internet. No matter what you do, no matter what group of people that you're with, it is just, you're going to find things that don't work for other folks, right? Like this person who runs this package who pushed back, like this is a valid reason for them, right? They do not feel that this should apply to them. And who is PyPI to tell that person that they're wrong?
Yeah.
This is hard.
Especially a massive contributor.
That's right, right? Like their package is big on their platform, right? I think the article quotes that their package is downloaded 6 million times a month. Right. I don't know about you, but I don't care what we're talking about. Use of, clone of, download of something 6 million times a month feels pretty darn ubiquitous to the ecosystem to me. Right.
That's pretty legit.
Yeah. Very legit again. And so there is a counter argument to this to say if someone whose package is so popular does not want to do this, what does that mean about the choice and the validity of this decision?
Imagine, though, if you're a hacker and you're like, I can hit 6,000 user accounts a month and pull back, or sorry, 6 million users. I'd take 6,000, to be honest. If you give me 6,000 accounts a month, that'd be pretty great. But yes, if you give me 6 million accounts and you can pop AWS or whatever creds per that a month, oh my goodness. You can see why someone would look at this.
I certainly hope that this person who is posting this has like a very long, complicated password and is using a password manager just on GP. You know, it's you don't want to advertise that too much. But you're absolutely right. I mean, we've seen this over and over again that these things absolutely can be compromised. And when they are compromised, it's very difficult to detect that they're compromised. The fix of them, again, requires one person to do a thing, right? If this person who maintains this package that's downloaded 6 million times a month gets in a car accident tomorrow, or is on vacation when this happens, right? Or, you know, just doesn't check their email for a day. Like that is incredible potential for widespread chaos, compromise, and security breaches, right? It just is. If that doesn't make you pucker up a little bit, you're not paying attention. And that gets really tough, right? This is why I have a very love-hate relationship with open source technology because of this exact reason, right? Like, I love companies that have big teams, right? Like, I work in Google Cloud all day. Some of my favorite people that I have ever worked with are huge security buffs on the Google Cloud team or the SRE team or the DevRel team who are working every single day to protect people, to protect projects, to protect data, right? To do the right thing and fight the bad guys, whatever you want to call bad guys in this case. And that's awesome because they have this incredibly talented team of highly compensated, highly, you know, utilized, great work, super smart people who are trying to make this happen holistically. And this PyPI thing is a really interesting analog of like, and they make a decision that is not in the best interest of at least a few people, right? And on the flip side of that, it takes forever for them to make changes because it's such a big machine, right? DoD, right? Like, we're talking about this stuff. It takes a long time to make those changes, as opposed to, hey, there's one person over here. I just got to send them an email or message on GitHub and say, hey, did you know that this is a thing? I'll just put in a pull request if you want to review that. And they go, bloop, and it's committed and it's instantly applicable. And it happened in like 10 minutes, right? But it's one person. And yep. If something happens to them, we're all hosed. And they have unique and complete authority to pull that package off of the internet, right? Yep. Or to update that package at their leisure to do whatever it is that they want. Like, it is hard. This is so weird. And it's very difficult to truly grok. And one tiny little butterfly wing effect is going to have massive repercussions down the line.
And even when, so you think to yourself, okay, let's take some additional measures and try to protect against this. So maybe you start taking every repo and tagging them, just like you have browser windows with like that green lock. You could tag these repos with like a skull and crossbones if they're not MFA enabled. You know, like that was the first thing that came to my mind. And it was like, oh, bad idea. Because then some hacker is just going to scrape, look for every skull and crossbones, and then start working username password attacks. Again, like everything you think of for the best of intentions, you're going to implement something and it's going to be like, oh, that did not turn out well. And then call back to the beginning, then just log on Twitter. Cause you like, if you're one of those people who makes these mistakes, if you just kind of like want to feel the pain of 1,000 snarks per minute, just go on Twitter. You will find it. I promise you.
And this is the only analog that I can come up with this. I recently read this book by Douglas Adam called Last Chance to See. It's a phenomenal book written in the mid 80s, I think. So it's a bit old right now. But when we talk about the ecosystem of technology, we're literally talking about an ecosystem. There are a million and one inputs that are all diversely and dynamically intertwined and interconnected and in this incredible equilibrium by some miracle of science, technology, and human will. And if you change one tiny thing, you really don't know how that's going to impact the greater ecosystem.
Yes.
You may have the best of intentions and you may unwittingly kill off this condor who was the linchpin of an ecosystem, who removed a predator for this species, who caused this bacteria to float and evolve, or I don't know, this metaphor sucks, you get it, but it's hard. It's complicated. It's like the economy and every ecosystem and every tropical island is just, it's hard.
However, I will tune into the Netflix documentary of how Kyle ruined everything.
Yes.
Because I'm sure that will be fascinating.
Anybody out there that wants to sponsor that show, John and I will happily make John and Kyle Ruin Everything versions of IT and technology stuff all day long. Dear Netflix, I am available for hire.
Yes. Classic Kyle. Okay. So, Have we hit it? I think we're where we need to be here. We covered, hey, open source, still awesome, but complicated. Security, still hard and very nuanced based on who you are and which position that you sit in. And we even gave you a little snarky snark. So Kyle, what is your hot take for the day? Are you sticking with your previously published or are you going to make an amendment?
I'm going to hold fast to that commit on this repo, which is just, there are so many critical projects that are one human away from never being updated again or being updated poorly or just being abandoned completely. And those are the underpinnings of everything we know in the technological and software development community. So just, you know, if you know anybody in your world that has created or maintains an open source project, please, please buy them a Starbucks gift card or something. Thank them. Give them a friendly, distant COVID hug or whatever, and tell them that the entire community appreciates what they're doing. And thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yes, and I will second that. I will also say we covered a decent amount of the articles, but scroll down at the bottom of the show notes, or it, maybe your app, your podcast app, will call it show description. Go all the way down there. I've hyperlinked all the articles for you. You will not be disappointed if you read these articles, because it's like every you read it and you're like, okay, this is good. And you keep scrolling down. You're like, oh my God, it's still going. And there is a bunch of juicy, meaty, great stuff in here. So highly recommend you go and read the article.
And I'll just, a huge shout out for Bleeping Computer. There's a lot of websites that we use on a pretty regular basis, but I generally find their articles to be really useful. They have a huge backlog of stuff too that they constantly relink throughout the article. So when you're on Wikipedia and you end up going down a Wikipedia rabbit hole, I commonly find myself going down a Bleeping Computer rabbit hole. In prepping for this show, we did this exact same thing. Like, I started saying, like, I'm going to do 10, 15 minutes of research of this. An hour and a half later, I'm like, oh my God, this is worse than I thought. So it's always a thing. Bleeping Computer, thanks a ton. And we are not sponsored in any way by Bleeping Computer. John and I just love that article.
We just love it, yes. Dear listeners, thanks for joining us. You can connect with us on social media by going to Twitter and following at USMC underscore TFPHOENIX. That's at USMC underscore Task Force Phoenix. Our editor is Sarah Clarkson, and marketing support is provided by Jake Osborne. You can support the cast by going to Apple Podcasts, which you have not been doing, and leaving us a 5-star review and comment. Do it. Do it now. And we are out.